Hello, this is Barbara Ridenour with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Friday, March 7th, 2025. We'll begin today's reading on the front page with Decatur Regional Chamber of Commerce, Better Investigations Improved Public Safety. Decatur Police Chief, Macon County Sheriff, speak at Chamber Luncheon. Illinois' No Cash Bail legislation, which went into effect September 18, 2023, has been helpful in one way, but not so much in others, law enforcement officials said. Violent offenders no longer have the option to bond out of jail, so they stay in custody and off the streets. But lesser offenses often mean the suspects are out and commit further offenses, said Sheriff Jim Root. Jail is portrayed as a revolving door, Root said, during a talk at the Decatur Regional Chamber of Commerce's March luncheon on the topic of safeguarding our community, policing practices, crime trends, and recent successes. Prior to the Pretrial Fairness Act, Root said, the average number of inmates in the Macon County Jail was 316. As of Wednesday, that number was 193. But numbers have increased 27% since the new law, with 3,042 bookings in 2022 as compared to 3,881 in 2024. The number of people who make a second, third, or subsequent trip to jail for new offenses is consistently higher than in 2022. One person was booked 15 times in 2024. In 2022, 16 suspects returned 4 times and 8 returned 5 times. In 2024, 62 returned 4 times and 62 returned 5 times. The safety and well-being of the community is not just the job of law enforcement, said Decatur Police Chief Shane Brandel, who also spoke at the luncheon. It's a shared effort with the community. Brandel has been with the Decatur Police Department for 28 years and has worked in 13 different divisions in that time. He was appointed chief in July 2021. A strong, safe community is the foundation for economic growth, thriving businesses, and a high quality of life for our residents, Brandel said. Policing today is not what it was 10, 15, or even 5 years ago. We're operating in a time of rapid change, facing a change in climate of law enforcement, an increase in violent crime, and significant staffing challenges. The issues are not unique to Decatur, he said. Departments nationwide face the same challenges. But he said the obstacles are not what defines law enforcement. It's how they respond to them. He said he chooses optimism and perseverance. In his time as chief, he said he has made significant changes to streamline operations and to introduce new technology and equipment to enhance the department's ability to serve and protect. One of those changes was a complete reorganization of the patrol division and a move to 12-hour shifts. It's long days, I know it, but it's also the most efficient use of personnel for a 24/7 operation, Brandel said. What's significant about this is it also worked for asked for by the unions, and they approved this change after a 1-year test trial with an 80% approval. They're using that as a recruiting tool, he said, because the new generation coming in enjoys having the extra time off that comes with 12-hour schedules. Another change is prioritizing calls so that response time has gone down 34%. Some calls can be handled by supervisors without an officer going to the scene, which means police can spend their time on high-priority calls that require a speedy response time, and those high-priority calls now have response times of 1 to 2 minutes, he said. The investigation division has also been reorganized. At one point, the backlog of cases waiting to be assigned to detectives was 250 to 300 cases. Staffing challenges create significant issues, Brandel said. I can sit and complain about it, or I can see how I can fix it, and that's exactly what we did. That organization included bringing in patrol officers who wanted to prove them selves to help investigate lower-level crimes. That not only clears up the backlog, but it gives the senior officers a chance to see who is willing to put in the work and potentially move to the detective division. Sometimes those cases might wait 6 months or more to be assigned, and now they're down to a zero backlog, Randall said. A major case like a homicide, which takes investigators away from other cases, can raise the number, but this year it was still only 5 cases backlogged. That leads to better investigations, better closure rates, improved public safety, and confidence that we're making a difference, Brandel said. In quarterly surveys over 2 years, Brandel said community members were consistent on their priorities for law enforcement, traffic safety, and violent crime. Enforcement of speed laws and driving under the influence has increased. The department was number one in the state for DUI enforcement for the years 2022 to 2024. And the increase in speed enforcement has gone up 200% with 3,500 traffic stops last year. Distracted driving enforcement has gone up by 137%. Violent crime, specifically shootings, peaked in 2021, and in the last 3 years, 3 police officers have been shot in the line of duty, Brandel said. It is dangerous out there for them. It is dangerous for the city, he said. Since 2021, shootings have decreased by 45%, and the number of people shot has decreased by 59%, he said. Records show a peak of 16 homicides in 2022, but that number decreased to 5 homicides in 2024. I don't celebrate those low numbers because it still shows that we have a lot of work to do, he said, and that's certainly what we're doing. And the large photo on the front page shows Decatur Police Chief Shane Brandel and Macon County Sheriff Jim Root with community members after speaking at the Decatur Regional Chamber of Commerce business luncheon at the Decatur Club on Wednesday, March 5th, 2025. And the police chief and the county sheriff are facing people, talking with a separate person. And they're in a big room, and there's a small stage here with a table on it, and it looks like this is after the talk. And the smaller photo here shows Macon County Sheriff Jim Root talking to Devin Joyner, Executive Director of Old Kings Orchard Community Center, after speaking at the Decatur Regional Chamber of Commerce Business Luncheon at the Decatur Club on Wednesday, March 5th, 2025. So that behind them, there is a big placard that says Decatur Regional Chamber of Commerce, and then the sponsors on the board. And Sheriff Root is behind the table talking with Devin Joyner on the other side of the table. Also on the front page, Illinois, Medicaid cuts would be devastating, advocates say. Springfield, ever since she was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer in 2018, the community care program has been a lifeline for Diana Inman. The program helps older adults who might otherwise need to move into a nursing home to remain in their homes by providing in-home and community-based services. The 75-year-old Decatur resident receives the services through Medicaid, the nation's health insurance program for more than 70 million people with low incomes and disabilities. I have an active caseworker who regularly checks up on me, and I've received regular cancer treatments at least every 3 months, Inman said. I have a dedicated home health aide to help me 3 times a week for the household chores. Cuts to Medicaid would be disastrous for people like her, she said. Speaking from personal experience, if I were to lose my health coverage through Medicaid, I would probably be forced to sell my home just to cover a year's worth of my medical expenses, Inman said. And then where would I be? Inman was one of several Medicaid recipients, hospital executives, insurance industry officials, and mental and behavioral health advocates who testified before an Illinois House Budget Committee hearing on Wednesday about the significant impacts that would be felt across Illinois if the program were cut. One by one, they painted a picture of a health care ecosystem that would essentially collapse, with up to 770,000 Illinois residents at immediate risk of losing their coverage. A safety net, hospitals in rural and urban areas on the brink of closure and critical services being cut. The hospital community is deeply concerned with the size and scope of these proposed Medicaid cuts and their impact on access to health care services across the state of Illinois, said A.J. Wilhelmy, the president of the Illinois Health and Hospital Association. The two-hour hearing was just over a week after U.S. Republicans approved a budget framework that calls for more than $4.5 trillion in tax breaks that would disproportionately benefit the wealthiest Americans, and $2 trillion in spending cuts, largely to social programs. The resolution directs the House Energy and Environment Committee to come up with $880 billion in cuts over the next decade to programs it oversees, which include Medicaid. While it does not specifically call for cuts to Medicaid, several state legislators said it is likely, next to impossible, to achieve the level of cuts outlined without touching the program. More than 3.4 million in Illinois residents receive health care through Medicaid, including 772,000 covered under expansion through the Affordable Care Act. Lizzie Whitehorn, the director of the Illinois Department of Health and Family Services, the agency oversees the state's Medicaid program, told lawmakers the state received more than $20 billion from the federal government in 2024 for Medicaid, accounting for about 62% of the program's cost. Of that, about $7 billion is for expansion, which has a higher 90% federal cost share. Illinois has a trigger law that would automatically end coverage if it dips below that percentage. Whitehorn said Illinois would likely lose between $24 billion and $39 billion in federal funding over 10 years under one scenario being considered by federal lawmakers. I want to emphasize that every proposal Congress is considering to cut Medicaid costs will result in health care coverage losses in Illinois, Whitehorn said. Democratic lawmakers who dominate the state legislature acknowledged there is very little they can directly do to affect federal Medicaid funding, but the potential for deep cuts has created significant uncertainty as they seek to craft a state budget this spring. Medicaid spending accounts for about 35% of the state's all-funds budget and about 17% of its general fund budget. They used the hearing as a clarion call to Illinois' three congressional Republicans, urging them to protect the program from the deep cuts that they say will hurt their constituents. The Republicans Illinois sends to Congress have the power to do something about it, said State Representative Robin Gable, Democrat of Evanston. As mentioned, Darren LaHood, Mike Bost, and Mary Miller need to see their state house colleagues speaking plainly and honestly about how the Trump agenda affects their communities. Because if they stand up for their communities, they can stop the most destructive plans denying health care for everyday Americans in our country, she said. According to state data, more than 196,000 of Bost's constituents, nearly 181,000 of Miller's constituents, and more than 139,000 of LaHood's constituents are Medicaid recipients. All three voted for the budget resolution, which was procedural and not the final package. Spokespeople for Bost, LaHood, and Miller did not immediately return requests for comment. State Representative Bill Hodder, Republican of Morton, a medical doctor, acknowledged the cuts would be devastating if they take place, but he called the hearing performative in nature. He also said Democrats were ignoring the existing problems with the program, such as low reimbursement rates. I look at this program and I've already seen the cuts, Hodder said, and so this, I think, is performative. We don't know what will happen. There's a lot of things that we have no control over, and I think that we were here today as a performative exercise to say, Trump is bad and we're going to lose the Medicaid system. But Democrats took exception to that characterization. I just want to say to you in earnest, this is not performative. said State Representative Lindsay LaPointe, Democrat of Chicago. We're trying to raise the alarm to the three congressional GOP members here in Illinois. We can't take for granted that they know about the $21 billion that the feds send to Illinois every year for Medicaid. So we're performing, I guess, for that audience. So they make sure that we can continue to have access to Medicaid in Illinois and in other states, she said, referring to the Illinois GOP members in Congress. In local news on page A2, keyboardist with Harlem Hayfield celebrates album with family tattoos. Mount Zion, Patty Sullivan, was willing to be permanently supportive of her son Hugh's band, Harlem Hayfield. She got her first tattoo on Saturday to prove it. The tattoo of the letters HH in script, surrounded by the shape of a matchbook cover. Patty and husband Marty Sullivan are musicians too. He plays guitar, she plays bass, and when they were young, they rehearsed in an apartment that was all yellow. Hugh Sullivan said, even the refrigerator. They jokingly called it the Yellow Chateau and even had a taxi sign on top of the refrigerator and colored matchbook covers yellow, writing the name on them as part of a joke. Harlem Hayfield celebrated the release of their first album with a party at the Lock, Stock & Barrel on Saturday night. Hugh Sullivan said that they agreed with their label. Each band member had to create and register a business name for himself to funnel payments through. He chose Yellow Chateau for his business name and asked his wife, Alita, to create a logo with the matchbook. He has a tattoo with the logo on his right arm and a tattoo of a bottle cap with HH on it on his left arm. In honor of the album release, his parents, Patty and Marty Sullivan, who drove down from Chicago to attend the event, also decided to get tattoos. Marty had to back out after advice from his doctor due to taking blood thinners, but made do with a temporary tattoo. His wife ordered temporary tattoos, and Hugh made some at home with his printer, and they gave them away during Saturday's album release party. Patty Sullivan went through with a real tattoo and said that she liked the HH on the matchbook cover instead of the bottle cap. I was just chatting with my mom, she said, and she said, can we combine the two so there's a little Yellow Chateau with a little Harlem Hayfield? And we whipped that up, and she was like, I'm in, Hugh Sullivan said. I think seeing Hugh's tattoos and the story behind them, I just wanted somebody to look at me, and I could tell the story behind the tattoo and show my support and my confidence that the band is going to go places, Patty Sullivan said. Harlem Hayfield's album, Banter, Tells, and Tricks, produced by David Bourgeois on the Bridge Road Entertainment label, was recorded at White Lake Studios in New York. Bourgeois has charted 5 Billboard Top 40 singles. Vinyl copies of the album, which include a digital copy, are available now at Art Farm in downtown Decatur and will soon be available at Speakeasy in Decatur. Digital and vinyl copies of the album will be available for purchase soon on Bandcamp's website. The band includes, in addition to Hugh Sullivan on keyboards, Mikey Schoenemann on lead vocals, Keenan Wilcott on bass, Chris Lurash and Brandon Pilger on guitars, and Graham Ween on drums. We have dubbed our sound Rust Belt Soul, Hugh Sullivan said of the band's style. It's a hybrid of blues and rock, but there's also a lot of funk and soul. There's a lot of different influences all pulled into it. It was too big for business cards, he added with a grin, and we had to narrow it down. The band members aren't full-time musicians just yet, he said, and they still have day jobs, as musicians say, but they squeeze in many tours of a few dates at a time as often as they can. Tattoo artist Lee Van Natta did the honors and streamed Harlem Hayfield's album over her Bluetooth speaker while she worked, in keeping with the spirit of the occasion. She does body piercings, too, and has been a tattoo artist since 2019. Band tattoos are not a common request, Van Natta said with a chuckle. I think the Harlem Hayfield tattoo I did on Hugh was the very first one I did, she said. I really do kind of want to do one on everybody else in the band as well. And the photos here, it's a big photo of Patty Sullivan reacting as two tattoo artist Lee Van Natta works on her Harlem Hayfield tattoo on Saturday, March 1st, 2025 at Black Eyed Jack's in Mount Zion. And Patty Sullivan's on the table and she's got a look on her face like, ooh. And then the tattoo artist is just beginning to engrave, as I say, her arm with the tattoo. And then the inset picture show Patty Sullivan with her tattoo of her son Hugh's band name, Harlem Hayfield, inspired by her son's tattoos. And then there's her son next to her. And then the inset here, I think seeing Hugh's tattoos and the story behind them, I just wanted somebody to look at me and I could tell the story behind the tattoo and show my support, my confidence that the band is going to go places. And that's a quote from Patty Sullivan that was within the article. Also, in local news on page A2, siblings sent into prison for kidnapping Decatur businessman. A sister and brother convicted of kidnapping a Decatur businessman in an attempt to extort money were sentenced Wednesday to 30 years and 28 years, respectively, in federal prison. Ademiko M. Macklin Carney, 26, and her 23-year-old sibling, Osarian Carney, were convicted October 11th by a federal court jury in Central District of the U.S. District Court in Springfield. The jurors took only 2 hours after a 5-day trial to find them guilty of the March 24, 2022 kidnapping of Decatur businessman James Ed Good. Prosecutors said the owner of Good's floor store had been lured to an abandoned house to give a flooring estimate when Macklin Carney blasted him in the face with pepper spray and her brother threatened him at gunpoint. The pair tied up Good and ordered him to call his wife with a $400,000 ransom demand. He was held for 6 hours before he managed to free himself, escape, and raise the alarm. The sentences were imposed by Judge Stephen P. McGlynn at the hearing that included victim impact statements. Good spoke to the Herald and Review previously about the struggle to embrace normal life after the incident and how stunned he was at the level of effort Macklin Carney spent to target him. She was Googling the store, me, my wife, my marriage, and our family, he said, and she was Googling the penalty for third-degree murder. All that malice, all that intentionality. I mean, just why? Where would you learn those behaviors? The Decatur siblings previously had filed motions asking McGlynn to vacate their verdicts and either order new trials or just scrap the guilty verdicts and acquit them both. Those motions were denied February 26, clearing the way for the Wednesday sentencing. Central plank of the siblings' defense strategy has been their claim that they were somewhere else when the kidnapping occurred. Man gets 63 months for child sex image possession. A Decatur man convicted of possessing images depicting child sexual abuse has been sent to prison for 63 months. Brian R. Lewis, 46, was sentenced on March 4th, having been found guilty in federal court following a jury trial in October 2023. After his sentence of 5 years and 3 months, Lewis will have 6 years of supervision after his release. Senior U.S. District Judge Michael M. Mim also ordered Lewis to pay restitution totaling $7,000 to two victims and to register as a sex offender. During the trial, prosecutors presented evidence that indicated Lewis possessed a cell phone in July 2020 that contained nearly 100 images depicting sexual abuse of children, including children between the ages of 4 and 6, according to a statement from the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Central District of Illinois. The investigation was initiated with a cyber tip to the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, and the images found in Lewis's possession included 6 known victims from previous cases, the U.S. Attorney's Office said. The case was investigated by the Decatur Police Department as a member of the Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force. And also on page A3, police say Decatur man attacked woman who rejected him. A Decatur man faces charges of domestic battery after police said he attacked an ex-girlfriend who refused to be with him. According to a sworn statement, Deontay J. Ward Hodges, 30, was observed on March 2nd damaging the woman's car, which included attempts to rip the rear registration plate off, breaking off the gas tank door, denting a fender panel, and breaking the rear window windshield wiper. After the woman said she went outside and told Ward Hodges to stop, the statement said he punched her on the right side of her head, causing her to fall to the ground. The document then states Ward Hodges dragged the woman by her hair before pulling her up as she fell against the car, and he hit her a few more times before he left. The statement says Decatur police officers observed the woman to have an abrasion on her left arm, laceration on the left side of her head above and behind her left ear. Officers also observed the damage to the car. Ward Hodges was arrested Tuesday and was charged Wednesday in Macon County Circuit Court with criminal damage to property. A domestic battery and bodily harm and domestic battery with physical contact. Ward Hodges was granted pretrial release with various stipulations, including no contact with the woman. And more local news on A3. Decatur Parks. Board okay sale of Oak Grove Park. Oak Grove Park is set to become part of the grounds for the new Dansby Magnet School. The Decatur Park District Board on Wednesday unanimously approved an intergovernmental agreement to transfer ownership of the grounds to Decatur Public Schools. It just makes more sense for that entity to own the park, given what they're going to do and the amount of time they're going to spend in the park, said Clay Gerhard, executive director of the park district. It's going to be one public body to another public body. It's going from one public body to another public body. The school board approved the $80,000 purchase of the park during its meeting on Tuesday. The funds will come from the Capital Projects Expense Fund. Dansby School is located at 2160 West Center Street, the site of the former Oak Grove School that was demolished in 2021. During the park board meeting, Gerhard compared the Oak Grove Park transfer to that of Johns Hill Park, which is now in the control of the school district for use by the school. The sale of Oak Grove Park also is in line with the park district's master plan of trying to eliminate acreage that is not utilized by the community for park activities. The purchase price of $80,000 will be used to offset the renovations at Garfield Park, according to Gerhard. This allows us to continue to move that project forward, he said. Local residents will continue to have access to the park, which was a concern noted by Commissioner Stacy Young during Wednesday's park board meeting. The park will still be available for public use, Gerhard said. There may be times when schools hold a function in the park when it may not be available. For community members interested in renting the park's pavilions, the school district must be contacted. If folks want to go to another park, they can always call us, Gerhard said. We want the green space to still remain public. Nearby parks include Garmin Park and the soon-to-be-renovated Garfield Park. We just want to make sure that the public knows that's a park and that they can access it, said Commissioner Shalith Hansbrough, because there are neighborhood folks who use the park on a daily basis. And that's all we have time for the first half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Friday, March 7th, 2025. This is Barbara Ridenour. Please stay tuned.